Hey everyone, welcome to On The Market. Today, we're going to be doing one of our tried and true formats, talking about some of the most recent and important headlines for the real estate investing community. And to do that, we have James Daynard, Henry Washington, and Kathy Fecky joining me today. Thank you all for being here.
Happy to be here.
And Henry, I think you're in Kathy's guest house right now. Is that right?
Yes, it pays to have wealthy friends.
We thought we'd bring the Santa Ana so that he could enjoy an 8-hour earthquake kind of feeling all night.
It has been pretty intense. For those of you who don't know, Kathy lives up on a big hill and the California Santa Ana winds are blowing through and it sounds like the world is ending. Basically for all night.
Well, I'm very jealous that you all are hanging out and are in the same area and hope you guys have fun. Henry, you're going to a big charity event, right?
Yeah, going to a party tonight and get to see some more cool friends and do some fun stuff. And, you know, it's like I said, it's good to have wealthy friends. You get to do fun things.
Nice. Well, in today's show, we have some great headlines and stories to talk to you about. We'll be covering some big changes in some of the fundamental dynamics in the housing market. We'll talk about recent economic data dropping, like job growth and inflation. And we'll be covering Airbnb's news about their policy update on security cameras. All right, well, let's just jump right into this. The headline is that new listings have surged. And this is according to Redfin, where they are saying that new listings are up 13% year over year. And that is a lot of growth, but I think it's just important for people to know that even though they are up year over year, new listings are still historically low. They're below where they were in 2022 and 2021. And this is a big change because even though a lot of people have forecasted a lot of inventory coming on the market, last year, new listings were down. Fewer and fewer people were listing their homes for sale. So I'm curious, James, let's start with you. Is this something that you're seeing in your market? Are you noticing more inventory coming online, or maybe this isn't happening in Seattle?
You know, I think it's very market specific because in Seattle and the Pacific Northwest, we have no inventory. We're below 2 months of inventory again. And most of the stuff that's sitting is not very good. It's more overpriced junk. And it's hard to find a house if you're a buyer. And there's a lot of buyers in our market. And it's hard to find a deal right now if you're an investor. For like 12 months, we had this kind of runway and the margins have really shrunk. A good example is you can't be picky in this market. We just had to contract a house and I inherited a naked man inside the house. And there's no deals in, but I was like, you know what? I'm still going to buy it. And so now I got to deal with this, but you know, beggars can't be choosers. No inventory. You got to get whatever deal you can get.
Well, I think it's important to note here, I should probably explain the difference in two terms here, that new listings is the amount of people who put their properties up for sale. Inventory is a measure of how many properties are for sale at a given moment. And although those sound very similar, they actually tell you two different things. New listings, again, is just how comfortable people are and how eager people are to sell their homes. But inventory actually also measures demand. So as James was saying, like new listings can actually go up while inventory stays low, because as long as there are buyers to scoop up those new listings, you can see inventory stay the same or actually even go lower. Henry, are you seeing any noticeable changes in your market?
We are getting a little boost in inventory, but to put some guide rails around it, we're still, I believe, 3,000 homes short to meet the demand in our market. So yes, new listings have gone up a little bit, but any of those new listings that are good, done well, and priced right are gone fast. We just listed a flip on the market last week. We had like over 20 showings in 3 days and got a full price offer pretty quick. So, I mean, 20 showings is like 2022 numbers. Like when I first got into the business and flipping pre-pandemic, we weren't getting 20 showings on properties when they were listed immediately. We were getting, a few a day, maybe. And now 20 in 2 to 3 days is pretty, pretty crazy. So there's absolutely buyers out there that are scooping up the new inventory that's coming on the market.
Well, that kind of seems good, right? I mean, I feel like the best thing that for a healthier market would be more new listings with demand keeping up, right? Is that sort of what how you think about it?
Yeah, no, it feels like this is what a healthy market should look like, right? If you've got good product, it should go fairly quickly if there's market demand for it. And if you've got crap product, well, it probably should sit. And, you know, an unhealthy market was like what we had post-pandemic when it didn't matter the product you put out there, people were overpaying for it. Like, that's not a healthy real estate market. But what I'm seeing here is good product goes, bad product sits. Even though inventory is low, bad product is still sitting, which means buyers are either being smarter with the dollars that they have, probably because it's expensive to buy houses. And it shows that, A, if you're going to be a flipper, you've got to do your job right. If you want your product to move and you don't want to be paying exorbitant holding costs, which is great for the market. That means there's good product out there.
Kathy, what do you make of this? Do you think this increase in new listings is just, you know, sort of slowly getting back to a more normal level? Or is this sort of a sign to things to come where we might start to see a significant increase in the amount of homes being listed?
Well, like anything, there's two sides of the coin, right? There's a, depending on who you are and what you're trying to do, this is either good news or bad news. If you're a buyer, you really want to see more inventory. So this is really good for buyers. You have more to choose from. When there's more competition, you might be able to negotiate. If you're a seller, well, just like Henry said, you got to be better. You got to be great. And so it's just seller's market versus buyer's market. But with that said, statistics can be really confusing if you don't look at the whole picture. So yes, it's a pretty dramatic increase, but from a very low place. So we're still at about half of where we were before the pandemic in terms of overall listings. So it's needed. So this, I look at it as this is great news. We're not at equilibrium. We're not really where we should be, though. This is good for the housing market, healthy. People need options, right? And like Henry said, they don't want to buy an older home. We do. We want to buy an old home that needs to be fixed as long as we can get it for the right price. But if you're just looking for a home to live in, you don't want to do that or go through that if you're not an expert. Most people just want to buy a house that's ready for them to live in. So those older homes that are priced too high, that need work, are going to sit until the price is right and investors can come in and do something with that. So I see it as good news. It's good news until it's bad news, right? Until there's too much inventory. But we're not there. We're not even close to having too much inventory.
Yeah, we're a far, far cry from that. And I do want to reiterate, you know, we always talk about national trends here on the show, but just want to share some regional differences and updates here because they're pretty significant. If you look at the markets that have the biggest increases in new listings, they tend to be sort of, well, I think most of them are higher priced, like San Jose, California leads the way with a 30% year-over-year increase, Phoenix at 30%, Las Vegas at 27%. Meanwhile, New York is actually negative 18%. So really big difference from what they're seeing in San Jose. But other, you know, more relevant to investor markets like Atlanta is minus 6%, Chicago is minus 1%. Virginia Beach and Philadelphia are both declined as well. So this is not happening everywhere. And so another reason you should probably just look at this data for yourself. Again, this report was from Redfin and they have some great free data if you want to check out new listings in your individual market.
I just have one quick question, Dave. James, what did you do with the naked man?
Yeah, I don't know how I skipped over that.
That is a work in progress right now.
Should you bring him some clothes? What does that mean?
Yeah,
we're strategizing that as a team right now because it was an unexpected surprise when my broker walked through the house. He's like, "Oh, we got a problem here," and so we've contacted the receiver and we're trying to sort that out. But we'll see. I mean, I might have to bring some baby oil.
His eyes are up here, James.
So I will let you know. I will keep you guys updated on this.
All right. Well, so far we've discussed housing inventory. And after this break, we're going to be talking about the macro economy and what the heck is going on with Airbnb's camera policy. We'll be right back.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Buy low, sell high. Very easy to say, but not always so easy to do. For example, high interest rates are hurting the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices in a lot of markets are falling, even for many of the best assets. So it's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pockets. Fundrise.com/pockets. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Welcome back to On the Market. So for our second headline, we're going to be shifting gears and talking about more of the macroeconomic environment. The headline is that the U.S. job growth totaled 275,000 jobs in February, but unemployment actually ticked up a little bit to 3.9%. And this story sort of bleeds into our third story, so we'll get to that in a little bit. But Kathy, let's just start with you. Are you surprised by the jobs numbers?
Everybody is consistently surprised by the job numbers. It has just been such a robust, strong market. But I will say we're getting closer to where I think the Fed was hoping to be, and that was a little bit over 4% unemployment. And again, good news is bad news is good news. This is weird that the Fed would want to see more unemployment. But when you get down to those low levels of employment, it's not necessarily great for the economy because businesses can't find people to work, right? So getting, a little bit over 4% would, I guess the Fed would consider to be a more healthy job market. And we're getting closer. We're inching towards it. So it's still a very strong market. It just will be a little bit more balanced, a little bit healthier, just like we're talking about with the housing market. You just need people who are available to work. And if everybody's working, what are you going to do? Who are you going to hire? But at the same time, there's still 9 million job openings. So very, very strong job market still. And that means that probably the Fed won't be lowering rates anytime soon, probably not till this summer. And we just have to wait and see what the jobs tell us then. It just keeps surprising people.
Well, that's a perfect segue, Kathy, and great points, but that's a perfect segue to our third headline, which is that consumer prices, which is just one of the ways of measuring inflation, the CPI, climbed to 3.2% in February as 2% goal remains elusive. So we, as a country, had been making some slow progress on inflation. It's been in, you know, the mid threes for a while, but it ticked back up from 3.1% to 3.2%. in February. And so I wonder, James, what do you think? Does this sort of give the Fed some pause about what they've been previously been talking about, which is that they were planning to cut rates three times in the coming year?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, we're all hanging on to the rates are going to fall. And but really what we're seeing is a little bit of a normalization of our market, right? Jobs are still increasing. People are still making money and costs are still kind of rising because the economy is doing well. People have that money that they can spend. You know, I was pretty hopeful that rates would start being cut in July because when the market I thought was going to cool down, everything was going to settle. And I don't see that happening right now. Pricing's going to keep it's just creeping up. And I don't see the Fed making any changes. I mean, they don't want to go back into what we were in 12 to 18 months ago. And actually, I don't want it either. You know, because if rates fall, consumer pricing, people's disposable income is going to go up and those pricings could spike as well. And so I don't see the Fed really changing much right now. In the jobs that are coming in, too, they're in definitely specific sectors. You know, we've seen a lot in healthcare. But one thing that we've noticed, which is great for real estate professionals, is there is more contractors available. There is more staff available as far as accounting jobs, marketing assistants, real estate professionals. We have seen a lot of relief and our wage cost and costs have gone down a little bit in that sector. So I know the jobs increase tell one story, but for us as real estate professionals, people need work a little bit more right now. And so that has loosened up a lot in the last 6 months, which has been a relief. So even though rates haven't fallen, employment's doing better, we're seeing a little bit of a bonus in the real estate side.
Yeah, as I was reading the first three articles and doing the research, the word that kept popping into my head was normalization. Whether it's normal or not, it feels like people are getting accustomed to the way things are. They're getting accustomed to what the interest rates are. They're getting accustomed to what home prices cost. They're getting accustomed to what inflation is, and they're getting accustomed to the job market. There are lots of jobs out there, and people have options. And so all of those things, they're all kind of tying together in terms of like nothing is stopping anything in its tracks. Like people are starting to live life again. They're going out, finding jobs, making money, and then spending money on homes and travel and trips. Again, I don't want to use the word, you know, healthy out of context here because I'm not sure if it's all healthy, but people are starting to just get used to the way things are. And it seems like things are moving along like we would want them to in a decent economy.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about sort of the disconnect between economic data and sentiment. And I think that what's driving a lot of the negative sentiment here is that inflation was so bad for a while that people still haven't caught up to and understand like what and sort of internalized prices for what they are. It is really shocking. Like, I think all of us still feel that you like go out to the store and see something and you think that is absolutely insane. But if you are able to just sort of like put that behind you and just say like, okay, that was crazy and it's still hurts now. But like, if you look at the way things are today, they are a lot better than they were, you know, a year ago. And it still might take some normalization, as Henry was saying. But if you look at sort of the data and suggest and look at sort of like what is actually happening in the market today, a lot of it is actually quite encouraging. And unfortunately for people who want rates to go down, that encouragement probably means rates are going to stay a little bit higher forever, or not forever, please not forever, for longer.
While we're talking about, I do want to put somebody on blast because I tried to get Popeye's chicken in the airport and a 5-piece tender meal was like $15.
That cheap? Wow.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Chicken tenders. Are you kidding me?
Did that come with a drink and fries?
It came with. So that's how they tried to make it better. They gave you two sides of processed potatoes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but In-N-Out was still pretty affordable, right?
In-N-Out was affordable and delicious.
You know, I look at this all like it's just math. I mean, if we're coming back to real estate investors and what does this mean to them, I thought it was really interesting. My daughter bought a house, as you guys know. I encouraged her to buy a house probably at the peak. Oh, was that a bad mom move? I was scared. But she locked in those low rates and the payment was affordable. Again, just math. She could do it. Then when rates went up, I thought, oh, you know, the values are going to go down. It won't matter too much because she's going to live there a long time. But sure enough, the house next door went for sale for more than what she paid. And somebody came in and bought it at those 7% rates, which is double her payment. Double. The person next door is paying twice what she's paying. But they had the money to fix it up and make it beautiful. So I think, you know, Henry, to your point, like, people are adjusting and this is what it is. And it comes down to math. And does it work or does it not work? And that's what investors are doing, right? Same thing. Does it work or does it not work? Have rents gone up enough that I can handle these higher payments and these higher prices? And in a lot of cases, not everywhere, but in a lot of cases, it does. It still works. You got to negotiate the good price, maybe pay down the rate a little bit. But if you're in an area where rents have gone up as well, you know, it's going to work. And one of the things I was just kind of reading is in the multifamily sector, we know there's a lot of new supply coming in. That's not so much the case with in single family or 1 to 4 units. Mm-hmm. There's not enough supply. And that's our territory, right? That's what we focus on. And there's not enough of it, but people want it. So we're seeing rents go up in single, you know, in the 1 to 4 unit world as well.
Yeah. And I think with investors, you know, the sentiment with investors too is, hey, let's wait until rates come down and I'm going to start buying more rental property. And what's happening is they're getting stuck on the fence for too long because they're waiting. And why this information is so important to investors right now is you have to adjust your strategy. If you're forecasting that rates are going to stay stable, that's not a bad thing, because the market should stabilize out as well. But you do have to adjust your strategy. And I think people are starting to do that a lot more right now. I know with our client base, there's a lot more rooming houses being looked at because they can get a higher rent out of those units instead of the traditional 2 to 4 unit duplexes. You got to figure out how to drive that rent up. Locational buying is really back with investors, and you have to kind of strategize behind that because we're seeing some pretty good equity growth right now in Seattle. I've seen houses now jump back up to pre-interest rate pricing in the last 60 days. And so some of the strategies is park your money, let it grow with the equity right now because we're seeing a little bit of a catapult. You have to adjust your strategy for every market. And if you want to play, you have to look at, okay, where is the opportunity? It might not be cash flow and you might not see it for a little while. And that's okay. But, you know, if you're waiting for rates to drop and pricing is creeping up like we are seeing across the board, you could get priced out forever. And so it's all about adjusting that strategy, what will work with whatever comfort level you have. And people are really having to do that, including myself. I'm like, look, because I want to pick up some more rentals too. And I'm like, man, this isn't penciling right. But I need to look at it different and look at a different asset class. And then I can make it pencil in one financial way or other. Just don't get stuck on that. Like, oh, does it hit the 1% rule? No, I'm out. It's like, well, look at it a different way. And people are having to adjust. Like in Seattle, they're buying rental properties and building ADUs in the back because it makes more mathematical sense than buying a duplex. And so it's a lot more work, but you can actually get it to revenue.
I agree with you. One thing that I'm seeing a lot of, in both in my market, but in other markets around the country, is people buying properties that maybe break even as a long-term rental, but they're getting them with a little bit of equity. So they buy them at a slight discount, and then they're turning them into mid-level short-term rentals. And what I mean by that is when people think of short-term rentals, they think, well, you got to go buy the big house with all the amenities. You need a pool and a pickleball court and a butler and a concierge. But there's plenty of just normal 3-bed, 2-bath in, you know, middle America towns where there's some people who have to travel there for work or traveling nurses, and they're putting those things on Airbnb, and they're not done poorly. They're done well. They just don't offer the same crazy amenities as the more expensive units are, but they bring in money very steadily each month because you have a lower price point per night. And there's tons of people now who would rather rent those places than go get you know, a room at the extended stay when they have to come to a town to just work at a hospital or work at the local, you know, corporation that's in that town. That mid-level, not super fancy Airbnb method is where people are really increasing their cash flow. And then if they have to pivot, they can put it in a long-term rental where it breaks even, or maybe even sell that property, break even, and get their money back. And so I think a lot of people are pivoting to very similar strategies.
That's great advice. Thank you both. Because I do think I'm hopeful that rates start trending down, but I do think we're all guessing. And historically, if you look at the way rates decline, it's slower than rates going up. And so I think this idea that it's going to go down quickly and all of a sudden you're going to just have this like fundamentally different market in a few months is optimistic at best. And so I think it's better to just start thinking about how you can cope with the existing environment. And if you're right and rates go down, it's just a benefit to you.
Well, and it's going to be a frenzy, you know, so take advantage of this opportunity right now where you have more time. You can do your due diligence. You can negotiate. You can find those deals that have been sitting, because believe me, when those rates come down, you're going to have other issues. And that's like other people making better offers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think, like, as we've talked about on the show many times, different markets have different pros and have different cons. And so although, yes, financing is more difficult, there's less competition, to Kathy's point, and there's more stuff on the market. There's more opportunities to be creative than there were a few years ago. And you should start thinking about that. We have one more headline for you discussing Airbnb's camera policy, which impacts operators and people renting in an Airbnb alike. So stick around to hear about that right after this break.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes. But how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com. Or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's move on to our final and weirdest headline of the day, which is that Airbnb just released an update to their policy and said that they are no longer allowing security cameras inside Airbnbs. Now, I gotta tell you guys, I was pretty surprised. I kind of always assumed this was a rule. Like, yeah. I just assumed you weren't allowed to film people in an Airbnb.
I'm kind of freaked out, honestly.
Right? It's so weird.
Oh, yeah. That just, I got the message from Airbnb and was like, what do you mean? Has this been a thing?
Can you see me right now, Kathy? Is that what this mirror is right here?
Oh, my God. I don't know. It, first of all, it proves that none of us read the terms and conditions of like any website that we sign up for, because it probably says that hosts can film you. And, you know, I was actually on the BiggerPockets forums and someone had posted, and this investor was disappointed because she had just bought a bunch of cameras to put around her house. But I think the overwhelming reaction on the forums was like, why do you have cameras in your house? Yeah. Like, I understand that you want to, like, if someone breaks something, catch it. But, like, do you really want to know what's going on in your Airbnb?
I feel like that's a law. Like, I thought it was like a law outside of Airbnb. I would think in California, like, you're just not allowed.
I thought this was
Who knows?
Like, I thought this was a no-fly zone. You can't have cameras inside, because I stayed in an Airbnb while I was waiting for my property to get renovated in Bellevue. And it was the spookiest thing. So I get there and instead it was a vacant property, or not vacant, on its own. I don't know. I'm not the Airbnb specialist for investing, but I thought it was its own house. I get there late. I come in, suitcase, drop it off. It says, take your shoes off. And I had to bring my suitcases in. And then I go up, I take a shower. I'm walking around my towel, like trying to like just get my stuff put together. And all of a sudden I get a text message saying, hey, can you remember to take your shoes off? And I'm like, what? This is weird. And then I'm like kind of looking around and I'm like, oh man, they're watching me. And then all of a sudden I hear a door shut in the basement and the owner was living downstairs and I had no idea this was going on. I got the spookiest.
What?
I was so creeped out by the thing. I had paid for 3 nights. I packed my stuff and bailed out to a hotel. I was like, I'm freaked out by this. It is too weird. I'm like, they're watching me walk around in my towel.
Yeah.
The guy told me I took my shoes off and he's living below me. And I didn't even know it. I sent him a message. I'm like, I thought this was vacant. I was like, that was my last Airbnb. I thought this was not allowed at all. I'm glad they passed this rule. That's weird.
James, all I wanted you to do is take your shoes off. I don't understand why.
I'm sure you saw me messing with all the thermostats too, because I was freezing. I'm like cranking it up. It's like not above this. I'm like, yeah, right. I'm cold.
Well, I wonder if it's I do think it is illegal in certain states, because in mine, it's a big house. People throw parties there, I understand. But they actually put in a decibel monitor. And so that, I think, for people who do want to like make sure that there's not huge parties going on in their places, like there are ways that you can do this and just like try and monitor the amount of people or if there's parties there without filming people. So I think there are alternative technical solutions here, because honestly, when I go to my Airbnb, sometimes I'm disappointed. I'm like, someone's used this house hard. But like, man, it would be worse to know exactly what was going on. Ignorance is bliss in a lot of situations. And I think this is one of them.
That's why I'm a hotel guy. Just take me back to the good old days of being filmed at a hotel and not knowing it.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to see that stuff, because if you talk to cleaners that clean up after Airbnbs, like if you go to an Airbnb house after they vacated before the cleaners go in, it tells you a story every time.
Yeah.
Like I remember I went to go look In like 2010, I was looking at houses for my own like VRBO short-term rental. And the broker took us through a couple that they had just left. There was so many hypnotic bottles. There was just, it was just a raging party inside. And like, oh, and they didn't know it wasn't cleaned yet. I was like, oh yeah, I'm not into this. I'm not renting to this. This is not my business model right now.
I want to say this is the email I got. It says Airbnb action required, remove or disclose security cameras, but it also says noise decibel monitors, you guys. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So maybe and they smart don't home that. Devices, you have to at least disclose those, but it's read it carefully because I never had the noise one, but I like the idea, but we have the Ring, right?
Yeah.
And I do have a funny story because I won't say who, but I think I told you guys a very famous rapper rented our place and there were music executives coming and our whole driveway was lined with very fancy cars. And they said, you have to turn off your Ring camera because we don't want you to steal our music. But I walked down the street just to hear it. It was very loud, very loud. So I thought I'm going to get the noise decibel monitor. But now just check out the new regulations because that's part of it.
Kathy, we've already established we don't read terms and conditions around here. So I will not be reading this email because I don't want to monitor what's going on in my guest house. Well, do any of you think this will actually have like any sort of negative impact on hosts?
I don't think it'll have any negative impact on hosts. I mean, you take the cameras out, right? I mean, if somebody's not going to operate their property because they can't have cameras inside, like, then they've got other problems, like, that they need to be able to figure out a way to solve. I don't know that it's going to stop people from either running or operating Airbnbs. I literally, when I got this, I sent it to my property manager and said, let's make sure we do what we got to do to stay compliant. Now, not to say I do not have cameras inside, but we do have cameras outside. We've got doorbell cameras and cameras on the facing the doors, just in case we ever have a break-in or anything, we can capture who's breaking into the house, but never any cameras inside. But I think almost every Airbnb does have some sort of smart home technology, and so people will have to figure out how to eliminate that stuff or disclose that stuff, but I don't think it's going to slow anything down.
James, are you going to put an indoor camera in the house with the naked guy?
That's a great way to get him out. Or not. Maybe
no, that's probably what he wants.
I don't need the camera. He's just there. He welcomes right in.
You know, it is kind of creepy when you think about it. Cameras are so tiny. For all we know, they might still be there. And that's weird. That's weird.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun. Thank you all so much for joining to talk about these important and timely headlines. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you very soon for another episode of On the Market.
On the Market was created by me, Dave Meyer, and Kalen Bennett. The show is produced by Kalen Bennett with editing by Exodus Media. Copywriting is by Calico Content, and we want to extend a big thank you to everyone at Bigger Pockets for making this show possible.
The housing market is changing, and finding your way right now can be a bit tricky. There are rate shifts, there are confusing headlines, but at the end of the day, your goal hasn't changed. You probably still want financial freedom as much as ever. Well, the good thing is that experienced investors know it's not about trying to time the market. It's about the amount of time you have in the market. And if you're ready to get into real estate investing game, you can still do that. Or you can take your game to the next level by finding an investor-friendly agent. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in just a few minutes. You head over to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter in some details about what you want, where you want to buy, and boom, you instantly get matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own. Investments in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose. Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.